Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you're going to stick around a little bit. Coming up in a couple of minutes, I have a letter that was published in today's edition of The Guardian of the UK. It is signed by, let me see here, 40, 50, 60 folks who are Jewish, and the title is We're Not Celebrating Israel's Anniversary. And since this was written by and signed by Jews living in the UK, I feel I have a license to read it and share it with you. And anyone who wants to label this an anti-Semitic document, you will have to send a letter to the UK, the Guardian of the UK, and address the people of the Jewish faith who signed it. But we'll get to that later. The numbers were released today. The gross domestic product of the United States went up this quarter. Are you ready? Sit down. Sit down. 0.6%. That's 0.6%. Whoo! I think I caused that the last time I filled up my pickup truck. But there you go. Now, the fact that it went up, ha-ha, we're not in a recession. Yes, we are. Prairie 2 writes in, Mike, the speculation yesterday was that the chimp in chief was holding that presser about the economy, the one that we drove you nuts with last night, because he had seen today's GDP numbers and was trying to lay blame on Congress in advance. Today, the pundits are saying, well, the number is above zero, so we've dodged the recession. Of course, when the revised numbers come out in a couple of weeks, you can bet that 0.6% of growth will have evaporated. But that will just be history. By then, it won't count. With the hundreds of billions of new money the Fed has been pumping into the economy, it should be going like a barn on fire, but the only thing smoking is the gas pump meter. GM has announced massive layoffs in their light truck division, and sales of all brands are way down, as much as 25% for Dodge. The obvious answer is gas mileage concerns, but most trucks are bought for business use, where gas mileage isn't the big issue. Lack of business is the big issue. This signal's much more dire. GDP numbers next month, when the layoffs and price increases actually start to show in the numbers. Unemployment could start to shoot up faster than the price of rice. Good thing the Republicans have been running things, or we'd be in real trouble. If Republicans didn't have all that money they saved by not paying taxes, they wouldn't be able to speculate in the commodity markets and make our economy the envy of the world. Before Bush, oil was less than $20 a barrel, and now it's more than $120. Is that growth or what? From Prairie 2. Is there anyone left in America who, according to the poll numbers, just a handful, who are not now painfully aware of what this corrupt administration has done to us? Is there anyone left? I don't think so. But we're not the only ones. Did you hear about this? Rome, Italy, elected a new mayor, and he's a fascisti of the Italian brand. And his name is Gianni Alemanno. And the other day they had a rally for him outside in Rome, and the crowds started screaming, Duce! 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 With the raised arm salute, the Italian fascist raised arm salute. The Nazis took it from the Italians. Alemanno is a former neo-fascist youth leader. He took 54% of the vote in a runoff over the weekend. And now you know that earlier this month, Silvio Berlusconi is back, another right-winger. He won just barely. He won a general election. And apparently, according to The Guardian of the UK, he welcomed this latest evidence of Italy's leap to the right by declaring, not in English, but in Italian, we are the new Falange. Now, okay, some of you know, some of you don't. The original Falange was the Spanish fascist party founded in the 1930s, which supplied Franco's dictatorship with its fascist underpinnings. So the Italians, up to and including Berlusconi, Dick Cheney must be just wetting his pants over this. The fact that they can actually just do it over there. They can just do it. Duce! I mean, there's no pretense of, okay, we're just conservatives. No. Right out in the open. Fascist. Of course, most European countries that have a fascist political party don't make a big secret about it. They just bring it out. In this country, they're called Republicans. Now, get this. Berlusconi's closest ally is this guy named Umberto Bossi. He's the leader of something called the Northern League. Sounds like the Catholic League. He's the leader of the Northern League. And this guy adds to the intimidating rhetoric. He arrived for the first session of Italy's parliament warning of violence if the center left, that makes up certainly a plurality. That's why Berlusconi coming back into power was kind of a surprise. The center left in the Italian parliament, and what is this since the end of World War II? Their 100th government. I'm Italian, and I can say this: these people are just goddamn nuts. I mean, they're like monkeys climbing up ropes. They're just insane. The Italians, but you know that from listening to this program. Anyway, Umberto Bossi. Say, he arrived for the first session of Italy's parliament and he warned of violence if the center-left did not go along with his plans for federalism. Now, you know what federalism is, right? Huh? Weak? No. Divisions of power, the unitary executive, strong central government that dictates everything. Anyway, he told reporters, I don't know. He didn't talk that way. He says, I don't know what the left wants, but we are ready. If they want conflicts, get this. I have 300,000 men always on hand. Whoa! What would happen if Hillary Clinton stood up in a campaign speech and said, you know, I hope the right-wingers in this country understand that I have 300,000 men waiting in the wings, and a few people don't go along... Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But see, we don't do that here. They can do it in Italy. They can do it in France. They can do it in Austria. They can do it in Germany. Well, maybe not Germany. But they can do it all over the place. Now, it was Monday night. The area around Rome's city hall rang to chants of, Duce, Duce, Duce. Mussolini. Now, this guy, Gianni Alemano, has promised that he's going to be a good guy. He's going to be the mayor of all Romans, not just the fascists. He sent telegrams to both the Pope and the chief rabbi of Rome, saying, it's okay, no problem. However, Rome's Jewish community was shaken by the prospect of a mayor with Alemano's record. This guy is a fascist. And what do all fascists want to do? First thing, burn the Jews. That's the first thing they want to do. So here this guy now, during the campaign, there was a protest aimed at him in the city's old Jewish ghetto, from back in the time of Jesus, I guess, where many of the city's Jews still live. But here he is, Gianni Alemano, and there he is, Silvio Berlusconi, and there the other one is, Umberto Bossi. And what have they put together? The new fascist Italian government. Things are getting very weird. Things are getting very, very weird. So it's not just here. It's not just here. James Schlesinger, you remember him. He's held every position from, I don't know, UN delegate to Secretary of Defense. He said the other day at a conference that... the people talking about peak oil were right, and the end of oil as a cheap commodity is just about 2 years down the road. It's going to be a rough ride. Keep on rocking in the free world.
primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Well, in the belief that there's still two or three Jews out there that I've not just thoroughly pissed off, in the belief that there's still a couple of Jews who are waiting to send me emails to say, "You're an anti-Semite," I'm now going to share with you this letter from the Guardian of the UK. It was a letter to the newspaper, like a letter to the editor. May 14th, I believe, is the celebration of the 60th anniversary of the founding of the State of Israel. And this is what the letter said. And it's signed by, I didn't do a count here, just looking at it, probably 75 people. One can guess by the ethnicity of the names that they are all Jews. As a matter of fact, they identify themselves as Jews. But here's what it says. In May, Jewish organizations will be celebrating the 60th anniversary of the founding of the State of Israel. This is understandable in the context of centuries of persecution culminating in the Holocaust. Nevertheless, we are Jews who will not be celebrating. Surely it is now time to acknowledge the narrative of the other, the price paid by another people for European anti-Semitism and Hitler's genocidal policies. As Edward Said emphasized, what the Holocaust is to the Jews, the Nakba is to the Palestinians. In April 1948, the same month as the infamous massacre at Deir Yassin and the mortar attack on Palestinian civilians in Haifa's Market Square, Plan Dalit was put into operation. This authorized the destruction of Palestinian villages and the expulsion of the indigenous population outside the borders of the state. We will not be celebrating. In July 1948, 70,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes in Lydda and Ramla in the heat of the summer with no food or water. Hundreds died. It was known as the Death March. We will not be celebrating. In all, 750,000 Palestinians became refugees. Some 400 villages were wiped off the map. That did not end the ethnic cleansing. Thousands of Palestinians, Israeli citizens, were expelled from the Galilee in 1956. Many thousands more when Israel occupied the West Bank and Gaza. Under international law and sanctioned by U.S. Resolution 194, refugees from war have a right of to return or compensation. Israel has never accepted that right. We will not be celebrating. We cannot celebrate the birthday of a state founded on terrorism, massacres, and the dispossession of another people from their land. We cannot celebrate the birthday of a state that even now engages in ethnic cleansing, that violates international law, that is inflicting a monstrous collective punishment on the civilian population of Gaza, and that continues to deny to Palestinians their human rights and national aspirations. We will celebrate when Arab and Jew live as equals in a peaceful Middle East. And the people who signed this include professors, people who hold the OBE, Order of the British Empire, all sorts of various names. And it's in today, Wednesday's Guardian of the UK. And I mentioned this the other night. I didn't get to it. It was another one of those stories. This was a mother and her four children who were in their house in... I guess it was in Gaza. And, yeah, here it is. A Palestinian mother and her four young children were killed in northern Gaza Monday during an Israeli operation against militants there. The Israelis said they shot a missile from the air that hit two armed men who were carrying heavy explosives, which blew apart the family's house behind them. Palestinian witnesses said they believed an Israeli tank shell or a missile from a drone flew into the small house, killing the four, five, as they were eating breakfast. Two other children from the same family were badly wounded and hospitalized. I'll tell you what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians and what the Americans are doing, causing to the Iraqis and the Afghans is something that, and we're about to do to the Iranians, is a stain on this country that I don't think, and a stain on Israel, on both countries, that I don't think can be removed. Excuse me. It would take centuries, and we probably don't have that much time left on here on Mother Earth. But it's just unbelievable. When I think I'm going to set aside what happened to the Palestinians when Israel established the state of Israel, when the people established the state of Israel, in the same way I have to set aside what happened to the indigenous population here when American when Europeans set up the United States. In both instances, of course, you know, this plays out in a historical sense many times in many different countries. But the United States and Israel had clearly the distinction of trying to set themselves up as moral leaders on Earth, that somehow these two countries had the moral imperative to be an example, to lead the rest of the world. What an utter, absolute failure.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour.
Money's good, works okay.
Got this email today, and I want to share this with you. It's from Carl, and his last name. excuse me. He writes, "My name is Carl Blank, and although I've been a longtime listener, I've never felt the need to communicate with you until listening to the show last night. I was just falling asleep when you read the report concerning the cleanup and shipment of contaminated sand and dirt from the site of a fire and series of explosions which took place on July 11, 1991 at the U.S. Army base in Doha, Kuwait. I sat bolt upright in bed about halfway through the report as I was a soldier who was trapped in the motor pool in which it occurred for the entirety of the event, and to say that it was an event which changed my life would be a grave understatement. I felt compelled to write to you for many reasons, but highest among these is the fact that I had to learn of the cleanup and shipment out of that country from a radio show, instead of being contacted by someone in the years since, someone in the government. After some investigation surrounding the incident, I learned that what occurred there that morning was the single largest release of depleted uranium in history. I was exposed to levels of contamination that were unheard of before that horrible morning. I ask, why have I not been contacted by the government to alert me to the hazard, and why have I not been extensively tested for uranium poisoning, and why do I need to find this information out on a radio show that I just happened to miraculously be tuned into so many years later? I would really like to discuss further with you, if possible, what happened that morning so long ago and the handling of the news about it by the Department of Defense after it occurred. As the true story was covered up, the troops affected were hung out to dry, and because it illustrates beautifully the emptiness of the rhetoric concerning, quote, support for our troops, end quote, that the White House has been bludgeoning us with throughout this present tragedy in Iraq. As an aside, I should tell you that I am being treated for severe PTSD, which was incurred during this event and a couple of other experiences which I lived through during this time. PTSD is a condition that absolutely destroys the victim if left untreated, as well as wreaking havoc on all who love them and society at large through having to deal with surrounding issues, such as the homeless problem. And then Carl, excuse me, gives me a contact number and asks that I contact him, get in touch with him. I had no idea that the soldiers and Marines that were exposed all those years ago to this depleted uranium dump would not at this date have been told about it. I know that Gulf War soldiers were never told about depleted uranium. It was after George Herbert Walker Bush's adventure in Iraq that the whole story of depleted uranium came out. And then, oddly, during the war in Middle Europe, during the Clinton years, the war waged by NATO against Yugoslavia, whatever your position was on that war is kind of immaterial. Once again, depleted uranium was used. When I was with Scott Ritter in Phoenix a couple of months ago, we discussed this issue in the forum that we held. And it came about because one of the audience members asked a question about the use of depleted uranium. And I took the position that you're familiar with on this program, that it's a war crime to use that. Scott's position was simply, having been a combat Marine, he said, look, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, when I'm faced with an enemy, I don't care what's used. I want the enemy stopped because my life is at stake. It doesn't make any difference to me. And that is certainly an understandable point of view. But he went on to say that the problem is not the use of depleted uranium. The problem is war. So what Ritter did was take a look at the overriding issue, and that is what we are doing at this late stage, maybe the end stage of this species, still throwing bombs at each other and committing murder and mayhem. Speaking of mayhem, Albert Hofmann died yesterday. He was the person, he was 102, he was the person who discovered LSD. He died of a heart attack at the age of 102 at his home in Basel, Switzerland. For decades after, this is what it says here in the obituary, for decades after LSD was banned in the late 60s, Hofmann defended his invention. He once said, quote, I produced LSD as a medicine. It's not my fault if people abused it, end quote. He discovered lysergic acid diethylamide 25, LSD 25, in 1938 while studying the medicinal uses of a fungus found on wheat and other grains at the Sandoz Pharmaceuticals firm in Basel, Switzerland. And then he became the first human guinea pig of the drug when a tiny amount of the substance seeped onto his finger during a repeat of the laboratory experiment on April 16, 1943. He subsequently wrote in a memo, I had to leave work for home because I was suddenly hit by a feeling of unease and mild dizziness. He went on to say, everything I saw was distorted as in a warped mirror. I had the impression I was rooted to the spot. But my assistant who was helping me home on my bicycle told me we were actually going very fast. And then when he reached home, Hofmann sat down on a couch and began experiencing what he called vision. He told a Swiss television network for a program marking his 100th birthday 2 years ago, quote, what I was thinking appeared in colors and in pictures. It lasted for a couple of hours and then it disappeared, end quote. 3 days later, Hofmann experimented with a larger dose, and the result of that was what he called a horror trip. We've all been there, haven't we? Those of us who've done it. I remember one time I went to open a door and the doorknob turned into a fountain of blood, but that's a whole different story. Hofmann wrote, quote, the substance which I wanted to experiment with took over me. I was filled with an overwhelming fear that I would go crazy. Oh, yeah. I was transported to a different world, a different time. Blah, 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 blah. He said that LSD-25 was one of the strongest drugs in medicine. 1 gram was enough to drug an estimated 10 to 20,000 people for 12 hours. And, of course, he discovered the drug had a similar chemical structure to psychedelic mushrooms and herbs used in religious ceremonies by Mexican Indians. The U.S. banned LSD in 1966. And for several decades after he discovered it, Hofmann himself took the drug, purportedly on an occasional basis and out of scientific interest. Whoa. Is he the guy, is his name in Hoffman LaRoche, the pharmaceutical company? I would imagine that was... So the guy who discovered LSD, 102 years old, died a couple of days ago. Now that, excuse me, to some of us that's a cute story. Here's one that's not cute. Iran, as of today, has stopped conducting oil transactions in U.S. dollars. Uh-oh. Iran is OPEC's second largest producer. And the oil ministry in that country said today that they are no longer going to conduct oil transactions in U.S. dollars. The AP dispatch says Iran has dramatically reduced dependence on the dollar over the past year in the face of increasing U.S. pressure on its financial system and the fall in the value of the American currency. Oil is priced in dollars on the world market, and the currency's depreciation has concerned producers because it has contributed to rising crude prices and eroded the value of their own dollar reserves. Now, nobody talks about this. See, whenever Bush gets out there and talks about the price of oil, this rancid son of a bitch never mentions the fact that his destruction of U.S. currency, Bush's ongoing onslaught against U.S. currency because of his economic policies, domestic and foreign, has resulted in the dollar turning into what Ahmadinejad said at a summit last year in Saudi Arabia. He called the dollar a worthless piece of paper. Of course, Ahmadinejad is about 40 years behind the curve regarding the worthlessness of U.S. currency, but still... It has been Bush's policies that began this slump in the dollar, hasn't it? Prairie 2 will correct me if I'm wrong. And as a result, the dollar is heading towards what? Certainly not the Zimbabwe, what's their dollar? Is it the pound? I'm not sure. Their inflation rate is what, 165,000% a year? And certainly not the German mark during the 20s and 30s. But the dollar is going right down the commode, thanks to George W. Bush. So, and wasn't it, didn't Saddam Hussein talk about, you're going to play that? Didn't Saddam Hussein talk about switching to euros right before they, you know, invaded? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Sometimes get encapsulated in a bubble.
Talk Radio, make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Ten before the hour, in response to the letter from the 50 or 60 signatories in the letter I read from The Guardian, the UK, regarding not celebrating, all Jews, regarding not celebrating the establishment of the State of Israel 60 years ago, and the comment about reparations. This from one of our listeners who is Jewish. Mike, you were talking about the right of return concerning the Palestinians. Put into context, there were 500,000 Jewish survivors in Europe after 1945 who had a genuine desire to return to their homes. The European countries, including the U.S. and England, refused immigration for these Jews, and they certainly were not welcome in Poland and other Eastern European countries. Only the Soviet Union gave Jews the right of return. Israel would probably not exist today if there was an open right of return and immigration then. The only hope for these refugees was Palestine and those Zionists who helped save thousands of lives for those displaced persons who were living in camps, almost as bad as the concentration camps. My point is that it is the so-called democracies that beat Germany that caused this mess. If there are reparations to be given to the Palestinians, it should be funded by the Europeans and the U.S. that dumped their anti-Semitic policies on the Palestinians. Jews were looking for a homeland after World War II. The U.S. was empire building. There is a difference. I believe that Palestinians have been victims, but the main cause of these ethnic cleansings since 1945 has been U.S. and British imperialism. Thank you very much. One thing about the Middle East, as it is in any desert country, nothing is ever as it appears. You know, we all know this. Ever spent any time in the American Southwest, the Sonora Desert, down around Mexico? I have. And things are not ever what they really are. What they seem to be. Let's not forget that in this land of the deserts, this is where three religions were founded, formed. It came about because of the, in my opinion, because of the weirdness and the hallucinogenic properties of, you know, forget LSD, forget mushrooms, forget peyote buds on cactuses out in the Negev. Forget all that. Just being in the deserts. Being part of a nomadic society, whether you eventually became a Christian, a Jew, or a Muslim, being part of that society would give rise to all sorts of strangeness and mysticism and shape-shifting and voices thundering down from mountains and seas parting and angels flying overhead, slaughtering children and food falling out of the sky. Sure, it's all madness. Nothing is as it appears. And certainly the story of the establishment of the State of Israel from either perspective, from the Palestinians or the Jewish immigrants, is not as it appears unless one takes the time to bang one's head against the wall by reading as much as you can by pro-Palestinian writers and pro-Jewish writers, Zionists. And read it, and then you sit there, as I've done, you sit there and go, oh my God, you know, why? These people are cousins. They're all cousins. They all share the same Yahweh or Allah or whatever. Why is this going on? Why is this going on? I never paid any attention to this my entire life. I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, going to school in 1967 during the war. And I can remember going to and from classes at NC State, just laughing my ass off that the Israelis were just beating the living daylights out of the militaries of Syria, Jordan, Egypt. Who else? Syria, Jordan, Egypt. Was there somebody else? And every day when, the Six-Day War, every day when the reports came in, you know, I was just gleeful. I just thought, yeah, kick some ass. Because at the time I was thinking, you know, 2 million Jews up against 100 million Arabs, and by God, the Jews are going to win. You know, I guess that's an American thing, right? Root for the underdog. And watching Moshe Dayan on the evening news with that eye patch and Golda Meir and I didn't know any of the Arab generals' names, but I damn sure knew the leaders of the fighting on the Jewish side, on the Israeli side. But nothing over there is as it seems. And now, why is this important on this radio program? Because U.S. foreign policy for the past 50 years has centered around our relationship with Israel. Because it's centered around oil. Our foreign policy with Argentina? Yes. Because it all comes back to oil. And it all comes back to our position in the Middle East. And where were we able to get a toehold? The Saudis would cut George Bush's throat in a heartbeat if it weren't for one fact. and that is we are good customers. The Arabian Peninsula was what 50 years ago? Nothing. What was the Saud royal family 50 years ago? Nothing. Tent makers, goat herders. And what are they now? Because of oil, because of the United States. So why is the topic of Israel-U.S. relations so important? Because there lies in that part of the world. I mean, if you want to believe civilization rising, literate civilization rising somewhere, it's over there. You know, a damn sure there's no other part of the world. No, no, not even China. Literate civilization arose in the area that became the homeland to the Jews and the Muslims. And I mean, it all began there, didn't it? I don't mean human life. That began in Africa. But I'm talking about all right, that's enough. Come back after the break and we'll do real radio. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Think that Cheney is planning this attack on Iran, that it is going to happen? I have something here that our military correspondent sent to me. It appeared at vetvoice.org or vetvoice.com, and it says, the bottom line is that it is exceedingly unlikely that any U.S. commander is going to implement a series of limited strikes and risk the substantial possibility of serious retaliation. An attack on Iran will almost certainly be sustained, violent, and broad in scope. To suggest anything else is misleading. And then he writes, I should probably note that I have no personal knowledge of the contents of any U.S. military plan to attack Iran. What's written above is logical conjecture. And what he wrote above is what we talked about the other night, that CBS is reporting that the U.S. is preparing new plans to attack Iran, especially once David Petraeus gets in, and now that Iran has switched their oil bourse from dollars to, euros? Euros if it's going west, yen if it's going east. Is that what it is? The oil? And the writer here, DM, says the plans are ostensibly designed to counter Iranian influence in Iraq. The article implies that targets will primarily, the article at CBS, implies that targets will primarily consist of locations that are related to Iranian activities in Iraq, such as IRGC command centers and weapon manufacturing facilities. And DM writes, I think the media need to wake up to what an attack on Iran would really look like. Even assuming that the objective of the attack is limited to reducing Iranian exportation of weapons and training to Iraq, the attack itself would not be limited. Remember, Iran possesses a fairly substantial defensive and retaliatory capability. First of all, any air attack by the U.S. would involve strikes on Iranian air defense and communications nodes, as well as on airfields housing military aircraft. This is necessary to protect our aircraft. Political and military centers of gravity would also be attacked in order to disrupt and delay the Iranian response. Second, Iranian naval forces possess conventional surface ships, fast attack craft, sophisticated submarines, naval mines, and anti-ship cruise missiles. Therefore, Iran can disrupt shipping, both commercial and military, in the Arabian Gulf and possibly the Arabian Sea. This is a crucial supply route for U.S. forces and for global oil distribution. The entire Iranian naval apparatus would have to be destroyed. Third, Iran possesses ballistic missiles, which could be used to attack U.S. forces and friendly nations throughout Southwest Asia. The U.S. would have to seek out and destroy these missiles. Additionally, U.S. forces, probably the Navy, would have to operate in the Arabian Gulf and elsewhere to provide a defense against any missiles that leave the ground. Last, certainly not least, we can't leave out the Iranian nuclear program. Whether or not you believe that the program is designed to produce a weapon, the Bush administration is obviously not going to risk seriously pissing off a country that builds nukes. Facilities related to this program will have to be destroyed. And then he says, the bottom line is that it is exceedingly unlikely that any U.S. commander is going to implement a series of limited strikes. An attack on Iran will almost certainly be sustained, violent, and broad in scope. To suggest anything else is misleading. And this comes from a writer. It's from Brian DM. No, wait a minute. This is something different. Yeah, DM. Whoever DM is writing at vetvoice.com. He's obviously a veteran. So how close do you think we are? Huh? How close do you think the United States is to launching, as this writer says, a full-scale attack? This is not going to be shock and awe as we listen to back in 03, when the Bush crime family launched their strike against Iraq, because the only targets that they had back then, they had no targets containing weapons because they knew there were no weapons, there were no weapons facilities, there were no launching pads, there was no concentration of armed forces, there was nothing. So what they attacked were targets that they assumed, they being the United States, assumed might be places where the Iraqi leadership was hiding. And it was also shock and awe, as this name implies. It was just to be so bloody and so brutal on the first day of that invasion that any thought of resistance on the part of the Iraqi military, what was left of it, or loyalists to Saddam or whatever, that would be absolutely crushed. The Iranian attack is not going to be anything like that. Because the Iranians, oh God, you know, the Iranians have been around since forever. The U.S. tried to put a little pressure on India the other day because, what's his name, Ahmadinejad, went to Delhi to discuss things with the Indian government. And the report that I read said that the Indian government responded to this kind of oblique pressure from the U.S. to be kind of crappy and unhospitable to Ahmadinejad. The Indian government responded by saying, look, I'm paraphrasing here, look, India and Persia are ancient cultures. We do not need the United States of America telling us how to conduct relations with a neighbor. So the attack on Iran is going to be, if it comes, it's going to be a monster. It's going to be an absolute monster. And I'm just wondering if anyone in the listening audience tonight thinks that the Chinese or the Russians or the Israelis or the Pakistanis, for that matter, will just sit back and do nothing while we launch a full-scale, massive invasion bombing. It'll be an aerial attack, obviously, with missiles and aircraft. It's not going to be soldiers on the ground because Cheney and Rumsfeld have destroyed our military, insofar as boots on the ground, I believe the phrase is, are concerned, they've destroyed it. They've absolutely butchered it. And the Air Force, which has not been allowed to play, or the Navy, been allowed to play very much of a role in either of these Iraq wars, is itching to go. And don't forget that the leadership coming out of the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs has been thoroughly Christianized, absolutely turned into Christian warriors. They're doing this for the body and blood of Jesus. When the time comes, there's been article after article after article in every publication from Time to Mother Jones over the past 5 or 6 years about the Christianization of several graduating classes that have come out of the Air Force Academy, to the point that these people are, and we're talking when they come out with a an officer's rank, these are people who have been taught, along with military tactics, that they are the forefront, they are the spear point in the army of God, and whatever war they get into, probably against Muslims, is going to be the modern equivalent of a holy war from the side, the perspective of the U.S. So what do you think is about to happen? Are you getting nervous? Are anybody out there nervous? Are you... Now, I know that most of us, certainly me, just push this aside. You know, when I hear the former U.S. Defense Secretary in the... was it Nixon? Nixon years? Saying that we have reached peak oil, and that all the people have been talking about it for the past 10, 12 years. Turns out that James Schlesinger, turns out they were right. That's what this guy said. When you have someone of his stature on the right, on the military right and the political right, making a statement like that, well, I don't know. What do you think? Let's take some phone calls on this. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova N.
Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Well, this is interesting. Our good friend James Risser, who writes all over the internet, suggest if he can pick three dates for a launch against Iran, it will be May 5th, June 3rd, or July 3rd. All three of those days are the days, the nights, I should say, of the new moon, when there will be absolute darkness. May 5th, June 3rd, and July 3rd. I don't like this. All right, we're going to take your phone calls in just a second. The number is 800-989-1480. Very quickly, Bill from Ottawa writes, Mike, bad news, I'm afraid. The attack on Iran is still on. Yes, we've been on about an attack on Iran for a year or more, but the clouds of war are gathering again, this time darker and thicker than before. Secretary Gates has just ordered another carrier group to the Persian Gulf. What's different is that in the past, they always said it was a normal rotation. But this time, Gates is quite explicit. It is a warning to Iran to back off, which would be fine if there was anything for Iran to back off from. There isn't, of course, so no matter what they do, they can't win. I keep asking myself, Bill writes, why they are doing this? There's no easy answers. A lot of people would say Israel, but that's wrong. Israel and America are not worried about Iran. Iran is not and can never be an existential threat to Israel. Oh, Israel will benefit, but the real goal is oil, and the real loser will be China. The strategic thinkers know that China is the real enemy. China is breathing down America's neck, not militarily, but economically. Anyone with a calculator can see that America is sinking and China is rising quickly. So what to do? What to do? The answer is simple, really. Control the oil, all of it, forever. This is going to be shock and awe to the nth degree. The plan is to hit them and hit them so hard that even the toughest fighters will be rocked back on their heels as they watch the slaughter. I think that the plan is to destroy, then control the whole Middle East, take the oil, and crush the Muslims, as Admiral Fallon said, quote, like ants, end quote. If you think this sounds bad, it gets worse when the blowback comes, and it will. You will be confronting an enraged, embittered, and determined enemy who will attack with a never-before-seen fervor. Bush will declare a national emergency, MSPD 51 will kick in, and that's the end of democracy in America. America gets the oil, the people will be happy, Israel will have a free hand with the Palestinians, and China will be told they are back to being just a branch plant. Oh, and Bush and Cheney get to avoid the war crimes trial. Am I crazy, Mike? Am I stupid? I hope so. I really hope so. Good luck. Bill in Ottawa. And the last one, this is from EP10, regarding the OPEC-dollar relationship. He writes, or she writes, when you guys don't give me a first name or a gender, I don't know what to do here. The writer writes, yep, the chickens are coming home to roost. Since the agreement in the 70s, OPEC was constrained to quote prices in U.S. dollars, and now that the dollar is tanking, and also the fact that they hate the American government, Iran and Venezuela are now screaming to the OPEC ministers to break away from the rotting dollar and let them trade in euros. You think it's nasty now? We've just been watching the previews. Quick, run out and get some popcorn, because this movie's going to get intense real fast. I don't know. All right, to the phone, starting with Stephen, who is calling from Miami Beach, listening on WINZ. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah. How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay. I know I don't have nearly enough time to talk to you about everything I want to talk to you about. Do I have your permission? The main thing I wanted to talk about was what I think would happen if the U.S. does attack Iran. But before I get to that, can I just say something, a couple things briefly about the 2000 election?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, it's important to me. According to a lot of experts, I heard this a couple of times, when Bush appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2000, a lot of people say that helped make it a close election for him. So that's a big mistake Oprah Winfrey made back then. Another thing, about 90% of the American Jews back then in that election voted for Al Gore. And the other thing I wanted to mention briefly, I don't remember the name of the organization, but there was an Arab American organization in the U.S. back then that endorsed Bush. All right?
Yeah.
And let me get back. Okay, let me get away from that because that's a distraction. But let me get to the other thing I wanted to say.
Well, wait. I have to ask you, why would you mention the percentage of Jews who voted for Al Gore?
It means that they're Democrats, and they still are.
Okay.
They don't want what Bush wants.
And the Muslim or the American Arabs are Republican?
Not now. I don't think
okay.
So.
Hold on, Stephen. Hold on. I got to do a break here, and then we'll come back. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Missing the living to love operation. Let's get them. But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Anthrax. Let's further demonize his Afghanis. So Americans cheer while we kill their innocent family. And what better place to start a war? To build a pipeline to get the oil that they have wanted before. Oh, about 26 before the hour. Let's go back to Stephen, who is in Miami Beach listening to WINC. All right, Stephen, where were we?
Well, I was going to get to what happened if the U.S. attacked Iran. And what I was afraid of there, one of the things I was afraid of, is if they did, you know, this is something that I heard from another radio show last year. I heard about it a while ago. I don't know how true it is, but supposedly Hezbollah, I don't know when exactly, supposedly Hezbollah acquired a potent strain of smallpox that if Iran was attacked by the U.S., that supposedly they would attack Israel with that. And if they have it, by the way, Hezbollah supposedly acquired it from Syria. If they did, and if they used it, I don't know what Israel would. I don't know how they would respond. I'm very much afraid of how Israel would respond to that.
Let me ask you, Stephen. How do you think they should respond?
I don't know. It may not be up to the Israeli people. It could be just up to the top Israeli leaders and their military. I don't think the people have a choice, really. They don't run the government there. Just like in this country, is Bush doing what the American people wants him to do?
No, not at all.
So they're in the same boat. It's just that it's in Israel. They don't want war. They want peace. The American people want peace, don't they?
I'm beginning to wonder, but I think yes, and I think Israelis and Palestinians want peace also.
I assume and the Iranians want peace too, right?
I think so.
So the only people who want war, I guess, are people who profit from it.
Good point.
Or people who are so brainwashed that they think a war is the only way to make the world a better world. Do you remember Hanna Ashrawi?
PLO.
Right. She was a Palestinian leader. Is she still alive?
As far as I know, yes.
I had the right pronunciation, though, right?
Hanan Ashari, yes.
All right, okay, it's a little bit different. She once on TV suggested that things could be settled more easily in the Middle East. I know it's not going to happen, but it could be settled more easily in the Middle East if women were running the countries there instead of men. That's what she said. Same applies to the rest of the world. And if you want to know what the real cause of it, the deep root cause, it's because of a chemical called testosterone. You've heard of that chemical?
I have to deal with it every day.
All right. Well, you heard about athletes that they take a testosterone additive to make them bigger or stronger, but it affects the way they think also.
Yeah.
But the problem is men have an oversupply of it naturally that they don't know how to control, and that's why we've had thousands of years of wars, I would say most of which are unjustified. Vietnam is a perfect example. Did Vietnam threaten anybody?
It certainly didn't threaten us.
Yes, they didn't have weapons of mass destruction. And that goes back. One of the causes of John F. Kennedy's getting assassinated was because he was pulling out of Vietnam.
All right, Stephen, wait a second. You're going way out in the ozone here. I appreciate what you had to say, pal, but you've introduced three different topics. Listen, Stephen, thank you. Very good call. I'm glad you called. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, if women were in charge of things, there would not be any more wars. Just every 28 days, there'd be very intense negotiations.
Well, I disagree with that. Margaret Thatcher and the Falklands, Golda Meir and the wars in that Israel was involved in, Indira Gandhi, and the internal slaughter of Muslims and Hindus and Sikhs until she was assassinated by a Sikh.
Benazir Bhutto until she was assassinated by someone who didn't like her spilling the beans about Osama.
Well, she got iced, but women leaders have certainly led their countries into wars. Now, using Stephen's theory, it would be that all these women their cells were saturated with testosterone, which, I realize the aggressiveness of that hormone, but, to say that women would be better because they're women where it concerns negotiating rather than going to war, I don't know, Stephen, that I agree with that point of view. Elaine is calling from Helsinki, Finland, listening on the internet. Oh, hi, Elaine.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good. How long have you been holding on? I'm sorry.
I've been holding on a while. It doesn't matter. Founders Club number 754 member reporting for duty.
All right. glad to see you present and accounted for.
Absolutely. Hey, Mike, I've got one insignificant thing to talk to you about, and then, of course, the Iran situation.
Mm-hmm.
The insignificant thing is my $300 rebate check.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to stimulate the American economy, right?
Okay.
What am I going to do with it here?
Well, how much is it worth there? How many kronen? Is that what you use, kronen?
No. We have the euro.
You have the euro. I'm sorry.
Yes. By the way, we're paying $8.60 for gas.
Yeah. Well, that's probably what it should be.
Keep you updated. Yeah. It can't even buy me the tennis racket that I teach with.
So your check is going to be worth about, what, 160 euros, 180?
About 100, 175.
175 euros. Well, yeah. Spend it on a nice dinner out.
Well, I'll just save it until when you and Kathy and Molly come to Helsinki.
All right, that's a better idea.
Yes. And now on to the serious issue.
All right.
Okay, may I constructively suggest, first of all, that maybe you might want to try to get Vladimir Posner on your show one night if he's still alive.
Oh my God, I used to watch him on Nightline, back when Ted Koppel ran Nightline during the Iranian so-called Iranian hostage crisis, and that guy I was intrigued with him, and he scared the hell out of me because he had idiomatic American English down to the point where. He almost had it perfect, and except for the little pronunciation glitches he would come up with, I used to think that maybe he was a robot.
Mm, yeah, well, he was. Well, I remember his show with Phil Donahue too.
Yeah,
which was very good. And you know, Maxine Waters has been speaking about this on the floor of Congress. I've seen video of that.
Uh-huh.
But for our listeners, let's just do a little geography here.
Right.
We attack Iran. What is due east of Iran?
Afghanistan,
Pakistan, right. India, uh-huh. Nepal,
right.
A good chunk of China, a yeah. few of the stands,
right.
alive, yeah. and you know, the death and destruction would be off the scale.
Yeah, especially if we release radioactivity into the air, either through the use of ours or Israel's weapons, or the destruction of Iranian weaponry that we may not know about, or nuclear reactors, or what have you. And I don't know what the prevailing winds there, I assume, blow from west to east, since they do in the Western Hemisphere. So I would be curious to see to what degree the Chinese rely on Iran now as an oil source,
right.
as one oil source. The Russians don't, because the Russians are a net exporter of oil. They have as much oil as Saudi Arabia, probably more. But for the Chinese and the Indians, you know, we're leaving, a lot of people are leaving India out of this. India needs oil almost as badly as China does. And to go into Iran and destroy their capability of producing crude oil to go to India and China, you know, those folks are going to be very, very pissed, aren't they?
I would think so. And, you know, just for our listeners back home, if we were to destroy that oil source, imagine what the price of gas would be then. Four or five times the amount.
Yeah, I think if Iran is attacked by the United States and or Israel, Israel may just say, look, you know, you people are so insane. Why do you think we spy on you all the time? You go ahead and do this one on your own. If Iran is attacked by the United States, I think we can just kind of forget driving our station wagons, oh my God,
SUVs.
Our SUVs and our mini vans and all, station wagon and all this other stuff. We can just forget about it in this station wagon. We can just forget about all that in this country. We can just forget about it, which might not be a bad idea. Everybody can get on their bikes then and ride wherever we have to go never mind.
That's what I do. I ride my bike whenever possible here. now that the weather's good, it's not snowing anymore.
Oh, well, so, that's a relief. Well, I can't. Go ahead, Alan.
I was just going to say that the late great Bill Hicks, who you remind me of in so many ways.
Yeah, but he was really funny and witty though,
and way ahead of his time.
Way ahead of his time, and I'm none of that. I'm just a reporter. But anyway, thanks for the compliment.
Yeah, but I was just going to say that Bill Hicks' solution was that every leader of the world smoke marijuana every day, because then their feeling would be like, oh man, I don't have time for this.
that's it. Hey, Alan, I got to leave it there. Thank you, pal. Oh, but you know that the guy who discovered LSD died today.
Yes, I know. Albert Hoffman.
Happy
May Day.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care, Alan. Take care.
Yeah, you
too. All right. Elon, not Alan. Damn it. Did I say station wagon? Oh, my God.
We're only 25 years old, with 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow old. Fighters for Texaco, fighters for...
into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Drop of a hat.
Jesus, really get high.
Vaporize the pussycat. Momentarily out of action. Temporarily out of action.
About 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Len is calling from New York City. Len is calling from New York City, listening on the internet. Hey, Len.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Okay. You sound like you have a cold.
Yeah. Well, it started out as allergy, and now it's a sinus thing. Hey, I got to ask you something. You're an Orthodox Jew. How do you feel about the celebration of the establishment of the State of Israel coming up, what, May 18th?
You know, we were on the verge of talking about that one time, you know. And the reality is, it's a miracle wrapped in an enigma, I guess, is the expression. Mm-hmm. I mean, to the extent that I grew up in the 50s in my elementary school class with a bunch of war survivors as teachers who mm-hmm. would not talk about. I in school now, by the time you're 13, you know about the Holocaust. You know all about what's gone on. Back then, the teachers wouldn't even talk about it.
Right.
I was bar mitzvah at 13. I had no knowledge of the Holocaust. My parents didn't talk about it, although they were here before the war. And, you know, when you look at it, you know, out of the ashes of that of the Holocaust, a state of Israel coming to being, you put aside all of the negative aspects of how that occurred. And you sort of look at it like a modern-day miracle, obviously, because, you know, if I were living in 1900s and I was sitting here in New York, you know, after a 14-hour day of work and I still had to hide the fact that I was Jewish, it would seem like a different world.
Mm-hmm. What do you make, though, of the... I just saw some still pictures carried by a couple of the wire services, and I believe it was in Queens. The Orthodox Jews of a certain sect who, and you and I have talked about this before, who believe that Israel can only be established by Yeshua, is that the way you pronounce it, and not by people or politicians. And they refer to the state of Israel in its secular configuration as, I believe the word was, abomination.
Were they ultra-Orthodox with
with the side curls and the tefillin,
right,
and, you know,
right.
the, all the But they look the same as any of the Jews you see in New York, for example, down on 7th Avenue or
in the effect of them. It's funny you should mention that, because I had a conversation with my brother about the whole Barack Obama business, you know, with the Reverend Wright,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, this is when, like I said, I was the youngest of three kids, so I knew even less about, you know, nobody would talk to me about the adult things when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that my father walked out of the synagogue when I must have been about 1 year old and stopped going there because the rabbi started railing against Ben-Gurion and exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, to the extent... You know, it goes back to Reverend Wright. I mean, if you've grown up, if you've lived your whole life feeling oppressed, which obviously black people have been, then, you know, the feeling of liberation is exhilarating, and you don't want somebody to spoil it for you.
Right, right. Yeah,
so,
well, that makes sense. Well, I've taken up a lot of your time. None of this is why you called in.
Well, you just were talking about when Iran might... get attacked. And I think it's going to have something to do with whether or not McCain looks like he's going to lose or win. And since, you know, we know from Greg Palast that there's a 6% or so fix, I guess, you know, when the polls come close towards... And then I was looking at the calendar, and Rosh Hashanah comes late this year. So I would say somewhere near the end of September, early October, if it looks like McCain's not going to win, that it wouldn't happen before then, because then they could, you know, kill two birds with one stone and stop the elections in some way or another while they're, while they're creating all the martial law.
How does Rosh Hashanah factor in?
Oh, just the timing of it, and that it's the end of September. You know, that it's like October surprise.
Well, more and more what I'm getting from people who are following this, and I don't know what their personal philosophy or religious point of view is that it's going to happen much sooner than that, Len. Now it's like in May, and May is what, tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I'm sitting here in my home office in New York. I don't have a lot of people calling into my show.
Right.
And it very well could be. I mean, you know, the guys are in. I mean, Cheney and Bush are only like 98% crazy. So there's always this margin of, you know, possibility that they're going to realize how calamitous they can be. So, you know, it could happen. I mean, what would happen in this country, I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
You know, it would just paralyze so much of our lives that, people wouldn't have time to do anything but riot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But these people running the United States are not known for their astuteness or their awareness of unintended consequences and more importantly, I honestly believe they couldn't give a tinker's damn about what the American public is thinking or how the American public might react. Look at the invasion of Iraq as a classic example. Iraq was not a threat to anybody, except maybe, Saddam was a threat to his own people. Obviously, he was a torturing bastard, but he was not a threat.
That was just to get elected.
Hold on, Len. Let me put you on hold. We got to do a break, and I just want to get your last comments here when we come back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Thank you. together. It's the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Back. It's 7 past the hour. We're talking with Lynn in New York about the attack on Iran depends on McCain's poll numbers in this September. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, yeah, because I figured, you know, they'll give McCain the credit, you know, benefit of the doubt and assume that he would continue this insane policy so they wouldn't feel like they had to do it by Election Day. And, you know, it's ironic. My daughter was, I just realized, taking part in, you know, like a mock UN symposium today. And she was talking about, she was on the panel for international war crimes. I forgot the name of the panel would be. Mm-hmm. So she was asking me what preliminary military strike meant. She didn't quite understand. She was looking at the word strike, and she thought they were talking about, like, you know, walk out or sit down at work.
Oh, would that that were true.
And I said to her, you know, theoretically, that it could be, it's like a coup d'etat. If the government said to the military to do something and the military turned around and said no, I think we'll sit this one out. Right, so I didn't know how influential the Air Force was. It that, you know, is mm-hmm. with the Christian right wing nut jobs.
Oh, it's just been unbelievable. There's been a series of articles over the past couple of years about how they have been warned. I guess if that's possible, I don't know what that means, but it is a government academy. And the instructors or the commandant or whomever has been told over and over and over again by who, I don't know, that they have to back off from this because it violates the First Amendment. But they have not backed off. And there is a whole officer cadre now that has come out of there over the past couple, 3 years. I'm not saying every single officer that graduates from Colorado Springs is some kind of a Christian jihadist, but enough of them have been inculcated with this holy warrior thing against Islam that it is scary. And these articles have appeared. If you do a Google or an ask.com on Air Force Academy Christianity, I think you will get more than you could possibly read in a week. But you didn't know about that. I don't think a lot of people do. I kind of pay attention to stuff. Some say I obsess on it because of my particular point of view regarding religion and its influences on culture. And it is scary stuff, Lynn.
I hear you. Well, the phrase that, you know, everybody's been focused on is "Yes, we can," right, with
yeah,
Barack.
Right.
But the most important thing that might get us peacefully into a new administration, as the other word to use, is not this time, because we're going to really have to just not allow it this time to be sucked into the crap that the Campbell Browns and the other sexy-looking babble brains, you know, repeat from morning till night.
I hear you. I hear you. All right, Len, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Always good to hear from you. Take care.
Pleasure. Take care.
Right, take care. You know, regarding Barack Obama, you know, all this, oh, Barack Obama, he's got to be a Muslim. Isn't the Prime Minister of Israel's last name Barack? I think so. What if it were Baruch Obama? Would they say he's part of the Jewish conspiracy? Oh, my God, people are just crazy. Right-wingers, and I don't care if they're Italian or American. Email from John Albert Hoffman, who died yesterday, the discoverer of LSD-25. He had no connection, John writes, with Hoffman LaRoche. He worked for Sandoz, I knew that. Real scientist. was a philosopher, scientist, yoga practitioner, greatly troubled by his discovery. Well, I think he was troubled by the way it was misused. Is there, I mean, can you, well, I guess you can. You can misuse anything, right? Any substance like that. Back to your phone calls. Oh, by the way, before you go back to your calls, this is from the Clatchy newspapers. ATA Airlines, when they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy back the first part of April and canceled all their flights because of mismanagement or lost contracts or rising fuel costs, whatever you want to call it, ATA Airlines was contracted by the Defense Department to return U.S. soldiers and Marines from Iraq and Afghanistan. As a result of the collapse of the airlines, soldiers, this is what it says, U.S. soldiers, sailors, and Marines are stuck in Iraq and Afghan airports while they wait for a ride home. Representative Jim Costa, who's a Democrat from California, said yesterday, his office said, his press secretary said, quote, it's hard to believe that when this bankruptcy happened, the Department of Defense didn't have a backup plan, end quote. Why is that hard to believe? This is the Bush crime family. This is just another example. It's just an endless example. McClatchy newspaper says the troops were scheduled to travel by military plane from Iraq to Kuwait and then by charter back to the U.S. A low-cost, no-frills airline based in Indianapolis, ATA filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and canceled flights on April 3rd because of their inability to come up with any money. Now, the company was part of a larger military charter team managed by FedEx. I didn't know that. Back last September, according to Aviation Week, the FedEx team won a one-year, $1 billion airlift contract with U.S. Transportation Command. And when FedEx recently announced plans to drop ATA from the military charter team, offering no public explanation, airline officials said they had no choice but to shut down. And the soldiers, sailors, and Marines who were waiting for their flights home, they were stuck. I don't believe they are still stuck. A month later, somehow the crack U.S. Defense Department came up with something for these people to get them home. Can you imagine this? If you were being rotated out of these ferocious combat zones where you may be on your second or third deployment and your nerves are like shredded wheat and you're just trying to keep it together to get home and you're sitting there with your gear and somebody comes up and says, people, but ATA, your airline, has filed for bankruptcy. You're stuck until something is figured out. Jesus God. That's when you slam in a clip, lock and load, and just stand there kind of trembling, right? That's what I would do. Oh, well. Back to your calls here. William is calling from Cincinnati, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, William.
Hello, Mike. I may sound a little paranoid here. Isn't it true that Iran has a lot of radioactive material?
I believe that's probably a very, very true.
And I would imagine they could be able to easily make a few, not more than a few, dirty bombs that they could
yes.
attach to their missiles.
That's probably very possible from an engineering or an aerodynamic point of view, yes.
So this is a real crazy disaster. Isn't it true that it's predicted if U.S. military attacks Iran that would precipitate a worldwide depression?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Absolutely.
And so, do you believe that it's possible in some of the now this is where I get a little paranoid, I guess. But
hold that thought for me, William, because I got a break here. Just hold that thought. When we come back, I want to hear what it is that makes you a little bit paranoid. So just stay right there, William. We'll come right back after the break. This is Nova M Radio.
On six crooked highways, I've stepped in the middle of seven sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into the sun. Fly into the sun.
It is 21 past the hour. We were talking with William in Cincinnati, listening on Sirius. All right, the paranoid thing, William, what is it?
Well, I would imagine that in Russia, and you know, the Russians aren't real happy about this missile defense system that Bush wants to
no.
in Europe.
No, they're not.
And I'd imagine in Russia, China, maybe Pakistan, and even India, and who knows that where else, that they may be a little bit, they have to be at least running scenarios about attacking and neutralizing the American military. With these guys being as nutty as they seem to be.
Well, it's impossible to attack the United States and neutralize us as a threat. And the reason is because, I'm not clear on the number, but I think we have anywhere from 6 to 10,000 nuclear warheads sitting on top of intercontinental ballistic missiles that are serviced every once in a while and are still targeted, certainly since Bush came into office, still targeted against key cities and probably have been retargeted against new key cities. And the whole world knows this. This is why countries...
The submarines would be the real...
Well, submarines too. But this is why countries decide to go nuclear, and by nuclear, not just nuclear power plants, but nuclear weapons, because they know, after watching the United States and the Soviet Union for 50 years, that the only way to deter an attack by a behemoth country like the United States is to effect some sort of junior version of mutually assured destruction. I don't think any country, with the possible exception of Israel or China, could ever match the United and Russia could match the United States missile for missile, nuclear warhead for nuclear warhead.
That wouldn't really have to.
No, you don't need 10,000. You know, this goes all the way back to the 80s when Jonathan Schell wrote Fate of the Earth. All you need is maybe 15 or 20 thermonuclear devices in the, I forget the range, maybe 100 megaton range or whatever it is. And that's it. The ball game's over. So
it's certainly destabilizing, though, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I think that every country should have 1,000 nuclear bombs and target on everybody else's cities, and then nobody would feel froggy, at least not to the
extent. As long as you don't have crazy people in charge.
Right. Well, since we're humans, we're crazy. Thanks, William. All right. Take care. Take care. Joanne, listening near Zurich, Switzerland, writes, "Dear Mike, attacking Iran? I thought that the Senate and Congress have to be involved in declaration of attack. Did the Patriot Act give Bush the power to do this? If so, surely all the Democrats and some Republicans in Washington could see the direction this has been taking and put forward some kind of legislation to rescind or diminish the presidential powers to insanely attack Iran. After all, no Americans really want this." Listening in fear from Switzerland. The Congress of the United States, Joanne, has not declared war since December 9th, 1941. The last constitutionally mandated declaration of war from the United States was that, after the Japanese attack. Every single conflict we've been involved in since has been done in some other manner. The War Powers Act that was put in place after Nixon went insane and started bombing everything he could see on a map in Southeast Asia said that the chief executive, the president of the United States, has the right I believe I got this right, to order an attack, but then has to come back to the Congress within X amount of days or weeks and get an official okay from the Congress. Not a declaration of war, but every single conflict we've been involved in. Korea was ostensibly a UN policing action. Vietnam came about as a result of the Gulf of Tonkin resolution. Every invasion, every slaughter of civilian populations, and they have been many in the last 60 years that the U.S. has been involved in, or last 70 years, has not come with a declaration of war. So, Joanne, what you're referring to is what people of my generation were taught when we were in school growing up, that there were certain ways to do things, up to and including even waging war, and that the rules were laid out in our documents, in the Constitution of the United States, how this is done. And those documents no longer apply. The Constitution of the United States has been so shredded by several of the past administrations, Democratic and Republican, as to render them utterly and absolutely, if not meaningless, certainly ineffective any longer. And so that's the long answer. Listening in fear from Switzerland, Joanne, people in this country listen to this program in fear in L.A., San Francisco, Miami, Chicago, Minneapolis.
Primal Scream, you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour at opednews.com. Jason Leopold has an article up. U.S. military coordinated day of prayer events with Christian Right Group. This is what Len and I were talking about the military. Or I'm sorry, the Christian fanatics take over of the Air Force Academy. But this is what Jason Leopold writes, just the first couple of sentences here. At least half a dozen active duty military officials have been working closely with a task force headed by the far-right fundamentalist Christians planning religious events at military installations around the country to commemorate tomorrow's National Day of Prayer. In working directly with the National Day of Prayer Task Force and agreeing to work as event coordinators, these military officials not only violated constitutional provisions governing the separation of church and state, but they also signed an oath that states they, quote, believe that the Holy Bible is the inerrant word of the living God, end quote, and that, quote, Jesus Christ is the Son of God and the only one by which I can obtain salvation and have an ongoing relationship with God, end quote, according to materials posted on the NDP Task Force website. Furthermore, the declaration signed by the military officials says that they promise to, quote, ensure a strong, consistent Christian message throughout the nation, end quote, and that National Day of Prayer events scheduled to take place at their military installations, quote, will be conducted solely by Christians, end quote. Now, there's more here. It's a lengthy article that Jason has up. National Day of Prayer is the one that Hillary Clinton is closely associated with, endorses, hangs out with. That's the Rick Santorum and all these crazy right-wing Christian fundamentalists. So, you know, any talk to the contrary notwithstanding, the U.S. military is being Christianized for what? You know, when I think of the mythological Christ and what he said about being a messenger of peace and turning the other cheek and suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of God and on, or kingdom of heaven, and on and on and on. You know, this renegade rabbi 2,000 years ago who wandered around trying to say to people, you know, you can't beat people up and have them say, I love you. Stop already. And what they've done to it. I mean, if such an historical figure existed at all, I don't know. I just know there seems to be a lot of on the record of what this guy talked about, or at least what his disciples talked about. So here we are with the U.S. military. This is like Putin and the Russian Orthodox Church. Have you been reading about that? I have. Like I told Lynn, I mean, this stuff just fascinates me because it's murderous. It's bloody. It's insane. This is why 6 million Jews died. This is why Sikhs and Hindus have been slaughtering each other. Why Muslims and Christians. I mean, it just never stops. But Putin, all of a sudden, in Russia now, has put his imprimatur on the Russian Orthodox Church. Putin, the former KGB, atheistic, communist, I don't know, what did he do when he was with the KGB? I wonder if did he rip off any eyelids or remove fingernails with pliers? I have no idea. No, that'd be Cheney. But now all of a sudden, and why? Because it's like the Nazis and the Catholics in Germany. It's an arrangement of convenience. And when the state can control the church, then everything's cool. Then they can start the death camps, and the church is not going to protest. I'm getting real tired of all this. Aren't you? I mean, I really am. George in Seattle writes, Mike, there will be nothing good to come out of a war with Iran. If George Bush attacks Iran, we will be a failed state. Our economy will be destroyed. Our democracy will be destroyed. The very nature of what makes America America will be gone forever. We will be at war for the rest of our lives, and our country will lay in ruination far into the future. We will never recover from a war with Iran, and George Bush will finally have achieved his goal of destroying America, and this time, when he puts up the mission accomplished banner, he will be right. Yeah, I'm as concerned about this, too. I don't think anybody's engaging in hyperbole about this horror that apparently is waiting right around the corner. And then we have... You know, I've been reporting tonight that Hoffman, the guy who invented Frederick? Hoffman? No, not Frederick. Oh, well. I did too much of his product and it destroyed my short-term memory. But Mr. Hoffman, who died at 102, I think yesterday, in Switzerland, the discoverer of LSD-25, this says, this press release, it says, contrary to what's been reported, Hoffman was actually killed by a blue beam radiating from a glowing sphere that appeared to be leaking orange liquid. The beam is reported to have said that the color black does not taste like licorice, but instead like old rice. Once the sphere sent its sortie to attack Hoffman, it was reported to have become very soft and started tickling the anonymous reporter's spine. The reporter then discovered that he was actually a wolf, and is practicing walking on the balls of his feet to better replicate the footsteps of the actual animal. I don't know where this stuff comes from. I'm just the messenger. I have no idea. Mary is calling from Memphis, Tennessee. Is this Captain Mary?
Yes.
Hey, Mary, how you doing?
As well as one can do in the middle of a fascist coup. How are you?
I'll be okay later on tonight after I have a couple of mugs of wine.
Well, yes. I guess there's while you were talking about religion there, I came across a quote by Albert Einstein who said, man would be in a poor way if he had to be restrained by fear of punishment and hope of reward after death.
Mm-hmm.
But more to the point about Iran, Annie DeFranco said, some people wear their heart up on their sleeve. I wear mine underneath my right pant leg, strapped to my boots.
and if you mess with me, I will whip it out and, well, whatever.
Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But one of the advantages to being an old lady is that you can wander the streets with your bag of goodies. And the youth will come up to you believing that you are harmless and tell you things.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm going to be an old lady myself someday.
I hope you're a happy old man, actually. It would probably be better for you.
you live longer, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, what the youth are telling me now is that they are expecting, number one, martial law. And number two, they are expecting an attack on Iran, which I also expect because all the hype is the same as it was for Iraq. And they are expecting a draft.
Mm-hmm.
And they are frequently saying things like, well, they can only kill me once.
Oh, Lord.
And they're speaking with veterans who are coming home angry.
Mm-hmm.
And they're anticipating revolution. Also up in the northwest United States, I hear that the cops are putting on black uniforms, and the reason they're giving is, quote, to make people afraid of us, unquote, which sounds like the martial law expectations are maybe closer than youth may think.
It also sounds like Hitler's SS.
Yes.
You know, the brown shirts, the bully boys, were fine until they were no longer fine, and then they had to be exterminated, and they were exterminated. And the replacement parts were the Death's Head SS. I don't know. It's just, these are strange times. You know, the Chinese curse, Mary, may you live in interesting times. These are not interesting times. These are strange times. I don't know. I don't know which way to go. I really don't. That's why I'm very amused by my own program. I'm amused because every afternoon about 3:30, 4 o'clock, when I really start to get serious about what is going to be on that night's program, I sit down. I realize that my mind is just like I don't know, like a bowl of cream of wheat. It just kind of there's not a whole lot, that I can find any substance to. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, what's it going to be tonight? Well,
what did the Cyborg and President Toad Exploder do today?
Well, there you go. But it's just so strange. I don't know. I was telling Kathy today that I think it's time that she and I learned how to butcher animals. Because obviously, when the invasion of Iran occurs, there's not going to be any oil for trucks to transport meat or and we also have to go back to Kathy's a pretty good gardener and knows how to can and does all that, puts up food in jars like my grandmother, for God's sake, used to do. But we don't know how to butcher and preserve meat. So we're going to have
it's
to figure.
Not fun.
I've done a little bit of that out hunting for pheasant. Of course, that's different. But I don't know. It's got to be a quick learning curve. Mary, thanks. Got to go.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
All right. Appreciate it. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
We can win.
Make me sound like Little House on the Prairie or something.
Ah, you're much cuter. Before the hour. All right, everybody, it's just about time to pull the chain on this one. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, who directed technically, Ben Birch, our podcast manager, our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, our resident philosopher, Bob Alexander, our writer in residence, Bridget Wolf, and our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. And if I haven't mentioned it lately, we invite you to become a Nova M founding member. You get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. All kinds of extra goodies coming your way soon. Plus, and this is the most important part, there's lots of Malloy swag available now. I love the tote bag. I carry things in there that I wouldn't want my child to know about. But it's a nice bunch of equipment, stuff, not equipment, soft, foldable things. Just go to NovaMradio.com and look around. You'll find it. And last I heard, is the 5,000 members equals a $10,000 drawing? Is that still in play, Kathy? Is it? I know when I first came to the network a year and a half? I think it's still in play. We are so close to that. We're lacking about, what, 600 subscribers. And then where are they going to get the 10 grand? Oh, I'm sure John Manzo has it in petty cash. So we're getting close to that. So if we can appeal a little bit to your greed, can we enter using an alias? God, I'd love to get my hands on $10,000. Holy Toledo. Anyway, there's that. Whether that turns you on or not is really immaterial. What we do need is your support. We need you to be a member. So sign up, okay? If you can. It's $10 a month or $100 a year. I know. But it is, if you can do it, we ask you to do it. Okay? And let me thank you in advance. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California, listening to KTLK. Hey, Sanchez.
Malloy, the best possible good evening to you from the West Coast.
Well, thank you very much, Sanchez.
Exactly what do you keep in that little tote bag that you can't tell your daughter about?
Guns.
Ooh. Shouldn't that be in a hard case?
Well, I guess it should, but that would be obvious.
Hey, I have before I get to the topic of Iran, I have two little quick odd notes to bring to you here. Last night on the radio show, which is called Clout with Richard Green, are you familiar with that show?
No. Okay. On Air America.
Yes.
I don't listen to Air America.
Okay. Yeah, I understand.
Okay.
It's one of the shows that's featured late night here on KTLK, and he gave you major props yesterday for your Monday evening show, the 9/11 show.
Who did?
Richard Green on Clout. He actually, you could go listen to the podcast. He gave you major props, man.
Well, I'm not signed up at Air America. I couldn't download the podcast.
Well.
Well, if you ever have a chance to talk to him, say thanks.
I do on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, tell him Malloy said thank you.
Okay, good. Second note here, you spoke to our beloved LaShonda last night, and you forgot to ask her how's the baby. The baby's probably a toddler now, no?
Yeah, I think the baby is about ready to start voting. LaShonda jumped out of the weeds at me last night. It was nice to hear from. I always love to hear from LaShonda. LaShonda makes my night.
Yeah. Okay.
But you're right. I forgot to ask her about the kid.
Yeah. Okay. Iran, you've had some brilliant callers tonight. It's been a very informative night. I would even vote this episode into the time capsule, the Mike Malloy time capsule. It's that good. About the only thing really that I can add to it was I saw Scott Ritter last week. He was here in town. He was promoting his book, and he gave a lecture. Uh-huh. And me, a few of the IVAW members, the LA Truth Seekers, the Nova M members here in Los Angeles, along with members of WhitterPeace.org, were all in attendance. And, he scared the bejesus out of us.
Yeah, I'm telling you. He is... he's a scary man because he is pretty much cuts right to the chase and tells the truth.
Yeah. And the Marine really hops out of him right away. So that's the part where we all snapped to attention and listened with great intent. He went into a lot of detail. I wish I could have taken notes on this, but he was talking specifically. Now, this is a plan that he says has been in motion for a long time. There was these B-2 bombers that have been specifically modified to carry these specially designed bombs, these bunker buster bombs that have been designed by the U.S. Air Force. Now, these things, they don't sit on the paper, the drawing board, and then just sit there for like 90 days. Somebody had to carry out and give these orders about a year ago. Mm-hmm. So this plan has been in motion for quite some time. And now, he was talking about the cover of night, the new moon, and all this. So my guess, and I would put my $10 down on July 3rd, because I don't think everything is going to be in place. Because, number one, you're going to have to, the Democrats are going to have to let General Petraeus pass as far as the Senate Arms Committee. They need to, you know, approve of him, and they will. They will lay down and do that. But once he's in, I think everything else is in motion. But I don't think that everything's going to be ready by the time June rolls around. So $10 on July 3rd for me, man.
All right. Your name goes into, yeah, you know, as far as this thing having been around for a long time, William Rivers Pitt, Reg over at TVNewsLies.org.
Yeah.
There have been innumerable writers. Will Pitt, I think, writing at probably Truth Out, and Reg writing at TVNewsLies.org.
Mm-hmm.
A year and a half ago,
yeah,
wrote about the obvious warmongering buildup going on in the Persian Gulf on the orders of Dick Cheney, or whoever is certainly not Bush. He couldn't find his ass with both hands, but Cheney could.
Mm-hmm.
So this, yeah, Ritter's right. This is not new stuff. It's been going on for quite a while. Yeah. There's the music. Hey, listen,
yeah.
Thanks, Sanchez.
Albert Hoffman was the name you were looking for.
Yeah, Albert. That's
there,
right.
There you go.
Thanks.
All right, man.
Take care.
Thanks,
take care.
Man.
Another one in the can. Catherine. Thanks, everybody, for participating tonight. We do appreciate it. Hope you become a Nova M founder. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.